Thank you for the introduction, and great to see you all again, or most of you anyway, that I remember. Yeah, today we're going over the Battle of Monmouth from Monmouth, New Jersey. And for those of you who remember Fort Monmouth, it is no longer there. They closed it about 10 years ago and moved everything to Fort Gordon. Fort Monmouth was famous for the very first military aircraft the Army bought and trained up and down the coast for Signal Corps. It was also famous for where FM radio was discovered, and essentially anything that had an electron in it that the military used either came from or went through Fort Monmouth.
Yep.
And since we are here, once again, happy birthday to the United States Army. Timeline. I'm sure most people in this room knew it, but it's a good reminder. The American Revolutionary War was a whole lot longer than most people remember. It started in 1765 with the Stamp Act. And it started everybody, hey, what are you doing raising our taxes? What do you mean we got to use this tax? What's going on around here? You're over there, we're over here, leave us alone. And it took about 2 years and they repealed the Stamp Act and quickly replaced it with the Townsend Act by sending military soldiers over, and oh, by the way, you got to house them. And then, which led to, as you can see, Boston Massacre, Tea Party, among other tea parties. For those of you who look into the various tea parties, they had lots of tea parties throughout the coast, the East Coast, which led to the First Continental Congress and the Intolerable Acts. I'm not going to go through all of the Intolerable Acts, but I will tell you this, they were intolerable. Lexington and Concord, the first official gun control try. Why? Why were the Brits going to Concord? Anybody? Bueller? Anyone?
Yeah, they wanted to black
arms were.
That's where the arms were. The rebels were already giving problems. Remember, the massacre had taken place, a couple other things had taken place. So Howe, General Howe said, get your tail over there, go get the flint, go get the wicks, go get the powder, go get the balls, the muskets, the cannons. And shockingly, the Americans didn't like this idea. So on their way there, they took shots at them in Lexington and then Concord. So I always say Lexington and Concord were really the first gun control try in America. Which led to the Second Continental Congress on 1775, which then formed, we need us, one of them, their armies. So they have one. And they put Washington in charge. I'm going to skip over and just end up how we get to the very end. But one of the things, if you haven't ever read about it, back here in 1783, the Newburgh Conspiracy, also known as the overthrow. They were going to, it was a coup, or an attempt, it was almost a coup at Newburgh. But it went on and on and on. So, next one. Here's your bottom line up front for everything about this, about the battle we're going to talk to. Took place in about this time of year. Was it a little chilly today or yesterday around here?
No.
Okay. I'm a South Jersey boy. It's the same there. New Jersey, Central Jersey, and South Jersey so flat. To quote my dad, you can roll a bowling ball from Atlantic City to Philadelphia. There's no undulating terrain, and it's hot. And you're surrounded by water, which some people point out might add to the humidity. So this is what they're dealing with here. British priority, what is it? Get your tail from Philadelphia to New York. Why? Because so many things, they had already lost up north at Saratoga. They were having difficulty with the Americans, darn us, and they wanted to combine all their troops in one spot. That one spot, New York. So get out of Philadelphia, get up to New York. Oh, we don't have enough ships for you, General Clinton, who just took over for General Howe. You gotta walk. On the way, the U.S. priority, not surprisingly, stop them. That was the U.S. priority. Stop them. How many are we talking about? You know, 12,000. How many you got? About 12,000. Washington hasn't had that good a record as going up against the Brits one-on-one. So a lot of people are, oh, you know, maybe, why don't we just let them go through? They meet in Freehold, New Jersey. We'll be getting more on that. The U.S. held the field. We'll go into the battle in a bit. That's for the purpose of this. But the U.S. held the field. Ergo, you hold the field, you win. The Brits go, nah, we got where we wanted and you barely touched us. That's what the Brits say. So even to this day, this battle is contested as to who won. The Brits did get to New York, and we'll talk about Washington's trick that they used against him. This was the first battle that you could see that standardized training, all that stuff, and the winter before with von Steuben, how, why and how they snuck him into Valley Forge the second time to do this. You got an obscure Prussian, he's the guy who came up with the standardized training and the regimentation for the Continental Army. British and Hessian soldiers were startled by the capabilities of this new army. And that's one of the reasons they say this was the birth of the Continental and the United States Army, because all of a sudden they stood toe-to-toe with the most powerful army in the world. Washington cemented his position. We'll go into why it was cemented. Last time we talked about Gates and his cabal that he had. The French fought with us. You got DeKalb and you got Lafayette, who were sent over. They were sent over a little before they were supposed to be here, but they were all winter long were with Washington at Valley Forge. You're going to learn a lot about Major General Lee. How Washington survived that he did after Gates and all his crowd tried to submarine him. He's got Lee to worry about too, as his second in command. Kind of like Aaron Burr. Not that he's... New Jersey gets proven it's not a flyover. It's worth fighting for. It has value other than that right. place that happens to be between Philly and New York. So, how did all this happen? Well, join me, Mr. Peabody and Sherman, and I'm going to take you back. There is the Northeast Coast. You've got York, Pennsylvania, which, by the way, is where Congress is right now because they abandoned Philadelphia. They went to York. You've got Valley Forge, and you've got this little tip right here. That's Sandy Hook. Sandy Hook is famous for being sandy, being a hook that you can see. It used to be the Army's proving ground until after World War I when you suddenly had weapons that shot cannons more than 3 miles, because that's all the thing is. And they used to shoot inland, not out. Sandy Hook is right across the Verrazano Narrows, so it's a strategic place. That's where the Brits had to go. The Brits were aiming to go there so they could get on a boat and go short term to New York. But essentially a ferry ride. So what led to Monmouth? Now, one of the things I want to point out, 75, the army's formed. Almost all of 76, those 2 years, there's lots of battles. Washington loses New York. Washington loses outside of Boston. Washington loses. Washington loses. Washington loses. Washington loses. That's what's going on. He had to abandon Philly, the capital. But we still declare independence. The Brits have a three-pronged strategy. They're going to come separate New York and North, New England, from the central, middle Atlantic states, from the South. They're going to come in and just concentrate one at a time. That's their plan. They figure there's nothing we can do. After New York, General Clinton, a name who will take over as the British commander of all troop, all forces in the Americas. Clinton got New York from Washington. He tried a flanking maneuver that failed due to terrain, and Washington saw it coming and escaped. They were minutes away from being crushed. The entire Continental Army was minutes away from being crushed and wiped out before they ever won a battle. But that didn't happen, so Washington took off out of New York and went to Valley Forge. Franklin, he's in Paris doing his thing, trying to get support, get the French in, get the Spanish in, get someone to support us, and everybody's going, we like your idea about going up against the Brits, but, you know, you really haven't won anything. Until Christmas, when Washington takes off across the Delaware River on Christmas night, stumbles across the drunk Hessians in Trenton, and beats them. And then on his way out, as you can see, then he goes back, he wanders around a little bit in Jersey, and then right after New Year's, after another celebration, he takes the Battle of Princeton. He then goes on his way back to Valley Forge, is another battle that very few people even know about, but it was right after the Battle of Princeton on the same day, the Battle of Assunpink Creek. Three in a week. Holy cow, what's going on? A huge morale booster for the United States and Congress and Washington and his reputation. Back, the French say, oh, this is interesting. They sneak in DeKalb and Lafayette in 77. All of a sudden, Washington decides we're going to go take Philly back. He doesn't. He almost does, but weather defeats him. And because of lack of training, you have a foggy battlefield, and you have Americans shooting at each other, and Cornwallis tells his troops, stop. And they let the Americans shoot at each other. And then when they're done shooting, he comes in and takes the battlefield. So again, he loses, Congress takes off to New York. Now, why in the world would you go back to Valley Forge? You already know what's there. Anybody? Any ideas? One, it's near Philadelphia, so he can keep an eye on it and the troops there. Two, he knows it. Three, he just got von Steuben. Now, very few people in America know who this guy is. This was one of the top secrets that Washington had. Same thing with that Franklin. All he kept saying is, I'm looking for this Prussian, a Prussian. That's all they would say. But they wanted von Steuben specifically. Washington knew there he could train. That's why he went back a second time. Suddenly, while he's on his way there, the Battle of Saratoga happens. The Battle of Saratoga is when under General Gates and General Arnold, we defeated a British army. An entire army that had marched down through Canada, whose sole purpose was to separate northern New York, New York City, and all of New England from the rest of the country. That's their purpose. At Saratoga in New York, we beat them. We crushed them. This is the first time the Brits have lost anything this big. But it gets the world's attention. The French suddenly go, all right, we're interested. You're on a win streak now. You can do small battles and big battles. So it's a big win. Convinces the French. Now, next thing you want to see, Philadelphia, just under the T in Trenton, is where Valley Forge is. Over here under the G in Harrisburg is where Congress is. Sandy Hook, this. They're suffering in Philadelphia in those houses with the food, all the food they have and the heat. So they're having a tough time. Here, this is New Jersey. This is Monmouth County. Here's Monmouth County. There is Freehold, or Monmouth Courthouse. Freehold is the county seat of the county of Monmouth. The Brits are coming through New Jersey, essentially from here, going to there. They're coming through here, they want to get to there.
Sandy, look.
So, in 78, they're in Valley Forge. I always thought this was interesting. Valley Forge was the place that a soldier was born or made, was the American soldier. Washington's weapon arrives. We talked about the training. Everybody who's here in Valley Forge that winter and spring, everybody trains. Everybody works on the standardization. So you are doing the same thing as you, and doing the same thing as you, and doing the same thing as you. And I don't care what colony you came from, you're all Continental soldiers. Washington had been trying for years to get that into their soldiers, but all the states would pull back or send militia and tell their militia to fight the way they want them to, not how Washington did. Washington's now got in his army, which is what he's wanted. He's got his army. May 6th, it's official. France is with us. They declare war on Britain. Huge morale boost. The British now have to worry about a naval fleet that is all over the world. They can't stay in America. They got to worry about the Caribbean. They got to worry about Central America. They got to worry about Europe. They got to worry about Canada. Suddenly the fleet dissipates. It is no longer the priority. The colonies in America are no longer the priority. They get a new commander, Clinton, the guy who almost beat Washington and took New York. So, troops still must be available, but they're going to consolidate. Here's what's going on and what people are wearing. Again, I want you to think about yesterday and today.
Yeah.
Being outside. No air conditioning. Not much wind. This is what you're wearing. Everything is wool. Everything is wool. Layers of it. And, oh, by the way, like all good soldiers and all good sergeant majors, they're ensuring that their soldiers are buttoning everything all the way to the top. Because that's what they do. So this is what they're wearing as they're marching from Philadelphia through Monmouth County in 98 and 100 degree heat. Both sides. The largest battle of the war. We've got at least, the figures vary depending on where you're going, but you've got at least 20,000 soldiers, both sides. It's anywhere between, we've had up to 14, to the Brits had up to 12,000. But essentially equal, say 11,000 each. Again, right here. You, Clinton, get your tail out of Philadelphia and get to New York. March. It's a 12-mile long train. With all the troops, all their gear, all the wagons, all the camp followers, 12 miles long. If we have any Air Force pilots in here, I'm sure, or Army aviators, I'm sure you're all drooling at the thought of a 12-mile-long train to come in and start strafing. Well, that's what Washington wants to do. You got that many continentals. Now, here's the other thing to remember, and do think about this. Washington's never had that many troops underneath him. He's never commanded, hell, with the exception of the British, nobody's commanded that many troops. And Washington sure as hell hasn't. And he hasn't done well with the ones that he's had, though, that he's had, which have been far smaller. The generals, they're arguing with him, you know, we really, just let him go. They're leaving Philly, that's what we want, let him go. Washington wants another Saratoga. That's what he wants. He's got enough troops, he's got the drive. Washington is the gear, the drive gear. He's the engine, the transmission, and the axles for the American Army. He is what makes the move. You also have one heck of an artillery duel. And can't see it here. All right. You can't see it right here, but here's the other thing that happens at Fort Monmouth. Molly Pitcher. Mary Hayes, I think her name was. Molly Pitcher. We'll go into her in a bit.
Yeah, I know her.
So to her, so to speak. So why Monmouth? As we said, this is where they've been. The generals. Washington's been training his generals and their staff work. He's got Nathaniel Greene, Henry Knox,
Mad Anthony
Wayne, as far as I'm concerned, a very overlooked general, a hero. He's got a guy, his name is actually Alexander, but he's always gone by and is always called Lord Stirling. He's an American, but he's known as Lord Stirling, one of the generals. Von Steuben, Lafayette, DeKalb, they're all training together and prepping. Washington gets rid, as we went over last time, Washington got rid of all the ankle biters and the people who were trying to bring him down, most of them. His leadership gets noted and is written about. The Brits decide to leave in May. They're going to do it in June. Again, someone up there in the logistics land doesn't look at a calendar. So they're going through. 11,000 redcoats. Washington's frustrated. He wants to do something. If we go back to the first quote you had, Nathaniel Greene said, "By golly, our nation expects us to do something. We've got too many troops." So what happens is, he gets with the generals, they say, maybe we could do this cautiously. So Washington says, okay, here's what I want to do. I want to send a vanguard up front. 4,000 soldiers. We'll send them up, send them out, to engage and harass. If they get into a situation, the main body will be following behind them. Kind of like what we do today. Go out, engage, fix, do this. Well, he offers it to his second command, General Lee. And General Lee goes, oh, 4,000 troops. I'm a professional major general. That's too small. Thank you very much, General Washington. So Washington says, okay, Lafayette, you want it? Yeah, okay. Whoa. Throw in a couple more soldiers, and I think it'll be worth my while. And Washington does. Lee then takes the vanguard. Now, as it says here, we got a fly in the ointment in this crowd. General Lee. This is General Lee. He and General Gates were really the only two field-grade British-trained soldiers at that time who were willing to fight with the Continental Army. Washington wanted them both because they had staff experience, they were trained, they were professional soldiers. The Continental Army was not loaded with professional soldiers. It was loaded with a bunch of fighters, but that doesn't make necessarily a unit or a soldier. So he does everything he can. Washington does everything he can to get Lee and Gates, and he writes to Congress and he says, we need these people, you need to make them generals, and so on and so forth. For whatever reason, Washington doesn't do well choosing his seconds in command. Lee figures, I'm a British lieutenant colonel, they'll be coming to me to run the army. They don't. He's pissed. Who's this Washington guy? But he accepts Washington's second in command. He'll be Washington's second in command. He'll put up with that. And he gets it. 76, he gets captured by the Brits. Please note how. Can everybody read this, by the way? Because if you can't. Please note how he gets captured. He's writing a letter to the other less than stellar general, and he's whining about General Washington. And he gets caught by, Tarleton, yep. Mr. Cowpens.
Yep.
Or Mr. X wanted to be Mr. Cowpens. So for about 2 years, General Lee is held in New York. Now, generals, when they're captured at that time, promise us not to escape. You have a free reign of the city. If you do escape, we'll shoot you. So that's how he's living for 2 years. He gets released in a prisoner swap. When you're released, you go back to your country's headquarters, and you have what they call a parole. You can't fight for X amount of months. Not allowed. It's unsporting. On his way from New York to York, Washington hears he's released and goes up to meet him and thanks him, congratulates him for putting up with those horrible winters inside with the fire and the food. So, but Washington is truly happy that Lee's free as they get all these soldiers ready, that he has a second in command he can trust. Lee starts screaming. He goes to New York, to Congress, and immediately says to Congress that he has found the army in a worse situation than he has ever expected, and Washington was not fit to command a sergeant's guard. How'd you like that for your 2IC? There's a trustworthy guy. For whatever reason, and by the way, without Washington's knowledge, Lee lobbies Congress to be made a lieutenant general, and let's make the army in my image how I think it should be. Forget what we've done with Washington. In May of 78, 1 month before Monmouth, he gets released and can be sent back to see Washington. I wonder if there's any problem with this. I don't foresee any problems. So, Washington knows the Brits are leaving Philadelphia. He also knows they're going there. That's too big a target. Washington's here. He can come around and catch them here, or however he wants to. And that's what he wants to do. But his generals are still antsy and iffy. Then when they finally do the vanguard thing, remember, Lee is now in charge of 4,000 to 5,000 troops at the head of this 11,000-man army. He hasn't been around anybody in that group for 2 years. There is no one familiar to him that he knows who's under him or their capabilities. He lives with what you just saw, he said to Congress. Those were how he felt about Americans and about Washington. But he's going to lead the way. Along the way, they will harass the Brits as they go up, and they will meet at Monmouth Courthouse on the 28th. As I said, Washington increased the size of the vanguard. Lee says, I'll take that. It's now worthy of me. as I said, Washington, he hasn't been around there. He didn't participate in any training or any drills, none, and yet he's in charge of these troops. This one's one of the things I enjoy. Washington orders Lee, after he gives him the vanguard, I want you to get your officers together, and I want you to come up with a plan, and I want you to brief your officers. Lee decides, I don't think I need to do that. But he does brief his officers, and he tells his officers, stand by for a plan. Huh. That's how they're going into combat. Go that way, we'll tell you what you need to know when you need to know. Got it. Lee finds the rear guard. And it's a very small rear guard. It's about 2,000 soldiers under Cornwallis, and most of the trains, the wagons and things like that. Lee launches an attack. He's got a 2-to-1 advantage. He's got fresh soldiers. He's got trained soldiers. But he's leery. He doesn't want to attack. He has been fighting anything to touch the Brits the entire time. He does not want to attack. Well, Cornwallis puts up a fight. I know you're shocked. We're being attacked. We'll fight back. Oh, I wasn't expecting that one. Lee pulls back. He's got a 2-to-1 advantage with fresh soldiers who have not marched all this way with all that gear. Lee pulls back, and he orders everybody, pull back. That's all they get. Well, let me put it this way. Those who got the order pulled back. Others suddenly found themselves by themselves. Anthony Wayne, Lafayette. They're out there by themselves going, where'd everybody go? Lee pulls back, and he pulls back. Well, all of a sudden, if you're looking around, and your troops that you've had left and right, the units are gone, you don't know if you're being left behind, if you're supposed to fight, or I need to go. But all you do know is, when I look up that way, I've got Brits coming at me. I'm going this way. Washington, leading the main body, happens to come up by himself. He's ahead of the main body because he wants to see what's going on. And he finds soldiers, American soldiers, running back in units, running past him. We're leaving the battlefield. We were told to retreat. And Washington, what? He wrapped Washington on his horse, rallies back and forth, all these soldiers in units, finally gets to Lee. And supposedly, from the various accounts of Washington's staff and his biography, Washington never lost his cool. A couple of family members, extremely close staff, occasionally saw Washington blow up. Washington blew up in public to his 2IC and railed him down and relieved him in front of everybody, screaming, I gave you troops and you did this. What are you doing? Where are they going? What is going on? And he relieved them. Lee, to the day he died, felt he did the right thing by ordering retreat to save the troops. Huh. To the day he died, this incident, which I'm not going to be talking about here, led to Charles Lee's court-martial afterwards. Lee just kept going about how right he was and how wrong Washington was. So, an overview. In comes Lee. This is the road that's going up to Sandy Hook. Lee stumbles with between 4,000 and 5,000 troops, comes across Cornwallis, who's got 2,000. Anthony Wayne is in the lead. He deploys his troops, starts to attack. Cornwallis fights back. Lee, for whatever reason, Lee's startled. Back he goes the way he came, and here runs into Washington, who stops everybody, turns them around, sends troops back to the main body, and says, get your tails up here now. Because when Lee attacked Cornwallis at 2-1, Cornwallis sent troops up to Clinton, the main body, and says, we're being attacked. Clinton said to half his body, turn around, we're going back to help. Lee could have wiped these guys out and set up defensive positions for Clinton. He had about the same amount of troops until the main body came, but he didn't. Because he retreated, both because they attacked and worried that Clinton would get there, Washington down here had to rally everybody and set everybody up in a defensive position. So Washington, in one fell swoop, switched the entire Continental Army from an offense to a defense. But he did it. He was on his horse all day, back and forth and back and forth. As a matter of fact, at least one of Washington's horses died of heat stroke. That's how hard he was working. So Washington sets up a position. The Brits come up, but they can't break the Americans. They've never found this before. The Americans won't break. They're pushing, they're counterattacking. Overall, you saw this map. Oh, by the way, I want to thank Mr. Ross Glover, who was able to separate this from that to give you that good overview that we had, and most of my maps. So, as you can see, with a little more, in comes Lee with Lafayette and Wayne. Now, here's another thing for strategists. There's Lee. He knows Cornwallis is here. He takes the troops that were on the right side and puts them on the left. He takes the troops that were on the left side and puts them on the right.
Yeah.
Why? I don't know. Neither can anybody else. Or does anybody else. And that was the initial attack. And then they retreated and set up defensive positions. You had Wayne over here, and everybody's back there. Right here, at 12:45, one of the quotes was, the leaves shook from the tree for Washington's anger. That's where he stops everybody and sets them up. Main body is coming in behind. But they gave up a lot of ground. So, in order of what's going on, Cornwallis makes several attempts to break the line. The other thing that, for the first time done well, American artillery from Henry Knox, training and training and training, and Nathaniel Green. Knox sets up 10 guns in front of the main body, and Washington sends Green around with troops and 4 guns. These guys can flank or enfilade the Brits. But each time Clinton or Cornwallis send troops in, the Americans kick them back, each and every time. The closest they got was when they went after Wayne and they got around his flank. He just retreated a bit, reformed, and went back. They weren't used to that. The Brits had never seen that before. At the end of the day, we're now talking, it's close to 4 p.m. 3:30 in the afternoon, Washington sends Green up here. The Brits are withdrawing. Washington sends people chasing the Brits. Now, our guys are hot and tired and beat also. Because remember, this is all hand-to-hand. But they go after them. And then at the end of the day, Washington sends Wayne after his troops. But then, it's 6 p.m. Washington feels because the Brits suddenly just pull back and go into defensive position. Washington says, we will take them tomorrow. Give our guys a rest. They need it. In this heat, the water. We lost about half the troops that were died in this battle were from heat casualties.
My God.
Aftermath. Oh, one more thing. The Brits sit over there. They set up their campfires. Washington watches them, sees what's going on, tells all his troops, good job, rides up, boosts their morale for tomorrow. They wake up at dawn. There's no Brits. The Brits did a Washington. They lit up all the campfires. They kept the campfires going at night. They had like 100 people there to keep the campfires going. And the Brits took off to Sandy Hook. Washington was livid. He was so ticked. I normally don't use that word ticked, but it'll work here. He was so ticked. He claimed afterwards, we were on the battlefield, we fought, we win. The Brits went, nah, we got to where we wanted to go, so we won. So that's how they got there. They used Washington's trick against him. Here's the aftermath. So up to this point here, you had Saratoga, lost for the Brits. Monmouth, nothing else, chased the Brits out, but I would say we won, technically. The Continentals could not be routed. The conduct of the troops gained notoriety. Clinton's secretary, I couldn't find this guy's name for nothing, but he said, the rebels stood much better than they ever did. Commander Erskine, who was the commander of the light infantry, British light infantry, said, it was a handsome flogging for the Brits. We had never received such one in America. Casualties, I'm going to tell you point blank. It really depends what you're reading. I've seen casualties as low as combined 250 to combined 5,000. I don't think it's 5,000. Most of what I found was the Brits were probably 1,100. Of that 1,100, probably 800 were wounded. Of the remaining 200, at least half died of heat. Same thing with the Americans. Now, here's what I love. And I have to admit, I never stumbled across this until this week. 1850, someone in New York found Lee's handwritten manuscript. Please read that. If you need me to read it to you, let me know. Okay, in that case. 1850, a librarian in New York stumbled across a handwritten manuscript from General Lee. In it, he addresses the royal commissioners. The royal commissioners at that Vermont League were Admiral and General Howe of the British Army, the top two guys. Lee detailed a plan that the Brits might defeat the rebellion while he was a prisoner. While he was a British prisoner. This is the guy Washington loved. And by the way, if for some reason you're not doing anything this weekend, the reenactment is this weekend up in Fort Monmouth. Here's a thought-provoking quote from Major General DeCab to the commandant of the French military. This is how it started, Christmas Day in 77. This is just as they were getting to Valley Forge. This is what they started with that led to Monmouth. And last but not least, this is from Lafayette. His quote was regarding Washington, I felt then as now, I had never beheld so superb a man. Questions?
Please, court martial.
The court martial?
Well, before 1850, sure, but that really justified.
That's how they stumbled across that document, the librarian in New York, because that's where Lee was captured. Was in New York.
And when was the court martial?
The court martial was in 1778 and 1779, right after the battle. Washington relieved him. When he calmed down, he was just going to let it go and let Lee go retire. But Lee just kept saying how right he was. So a court martial ensued. Lee was found guilty on 3 counts, to include insubordination. That was the big one. And he died a disgraced man. And that's all I have.
Very good.